There was a loud explosion, and the building began to sway from side to side. Anna was hurled across the corridor, ending up flat on the canvas as if she'd been floored by a heavyweight boxer. The elevator doors opened, and she watched as a fireball of fuel shot through the shaft, searching for oxygen. Her first thought was the building must have been struck by lightning, but she quickly dismissed that idea as there wasn't a cloud in the sky. An eerie silence followed, and Anna wondered if she'd gone deaf, but this was soon replaced by screams of, "Oh my God!" as huge shards of jagged glass, twisted metal, and office furniture flew past the windows in front of her. "It must be another bomb," was Anna's second thought. Anna tried to remember what she was supposed to do in such an emergency. She recalled the clear instructions printed in red on the exit door to the stairwell on every floor. "In case of emergency, do not return to your desk. Do not use the elevator. Exit by the nearest stairwell." But first, Anna needed to find out if she could even stand up, aware that part of the ceiling had collapsed on her and the building was still swaying. She tried tentatively to push herself up, and although she was bruised and cut in several places, nothing seemed broken. She stretched for a moment, as she always did before starting out on a long run. "What are we supposed to do?" asked a secretary. "Do we wait to be rescued?" asked a bond dealer. These were all questions for the security officer, but Barry was nowhere to be seen. Once Anna reached the stairwell, she joined a group of dazed people, some silent, some crying, who weren't quite sure what to do next. No one seemed to have the slightest idea what had caused the explosion, or why the building was still swaying. Although several of the lights on the stairwell had been snuffed out like candles, the photoluminescent strip that ran along the edge of each step shone brightly up at her. Some of those around her were trying to contact the outside world on their cell phones, but few were succeeding. One who did began to relay to those around him the conversation he was having with his wife. "A plane has hit the North Tower," he announced. Anna looked back through the glass window and was surprised to see how many people had remained at their desks, as if they were in a theater after the curtain had come down and had decided to wait until the initial rush had dispersed. She began to count the steps as she walked down each flight. 18 to each floor, which she calculated meant at least another 1,500 before she would reach the lobby. The stairwell became more and more crowded as countless people swarmed out of their offices to join them on each floor, making it feel like a crowded subway during rush hour. Anna was surprised by how calm the descending line was. The stairwell quickly separated into two lanes, with the slowest on the inside while the latest models were able to pass on the outside. But just like any highway, not everyone kept to the code, so regularly everything came to a complete standstill before moving off unsteadily again. On she trudged, sometimes reaching the next floor in less than a minute, but more often being held up by those who had become exhausted after descending only a few floors. Anna heard the first clear order when she reached the 68th floor. "Get to the right and keep moving," said an authoritative voice from somewhere below her. Although the instruction became louder with each step she took, it was still several more floors before she spotted the first fireman heading slowly toward her. He was wearing a baggy fireproof suit and sweating profusely under his black helmet emblazoned with the number 28. Anna could only wonder what state he'd be in after he'd climbed another 30 floors. He also appeared to be overloaded with equipment. Coiled ropes over one shoulder and two oxygen tanks on his back, like a mountaineer trying to conquer Everest. Another fireman followed closely behind, carrying a vast length of hose, six pole arms, and a large bottle of drinking water. Whenever she reached a new landing, Anna stared through the vast panes of glass at workers who remained at their desks, apparently oblivious to those fleeing in front of their eyes. She even overheard snatches of conversation through the open doors. One of them, a broker on the 62nd floor, was trying to close a deal before the markets opened at 9 o'clock. Another was staring out at her as if the pane of glass was a television screen and he was reporting on a football game. He was giving a running commentary over the phone to a friend in the South Tower. More and more firemen were now climbing toward her, turning the highway into two-way traffic, their constant cry, "Get to the right! Keep moving!" Anna kept moving, her speed often dictated by the slowest participant. Although the building had stopped swaying, tension and fear could still be seen on the faces of all those around her. They didn't know what had happened above them, and had no idea what awaited them below. Anna felt guilty as she passed an old woman who was being carried down in a large leather chair by two young men, her legs swollen, her breathing uneven. On, 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 Anna went, floor after floor, until even she began to feel tired. She thought about Rebecca and Tina, and prayed they were both safe. She even wondered if Fenston and Liepman were still sitting in the chairman's office, believing themselves impervious to any danger. Anna began to feel confident that she was now safe and would eventually wake up from this nightmare. She even smiled at some of the New York humor that was bouncing around her until she heard a voice behind her scream, "A second plane has hit the South Tower!"